Hello again, everybody. This is James Bartley, and you're watching and listening to the Cosmic Switchboard Show. My special guest today is Paul Ponsat from France. Paul is a veteran, longtime investigator, not only into the surface world, a geopolitical conspiracy, financial conspiracy, but to the greater behind the scenes metaphysical, esoteric aspects of it as well. And I'm really excited about talking to Paul. And I really want to get his take on current events and where, from his perspective, he sees all this trending. So without any further ado, Paul, welcome to the Cosmic Switchboard Show.
Well, thank you, James. It's really an honor for me because I've been following your work for many years, and in fact, it's one some of the best work you can get on the internet. It's serious. Your shows are serious, and the guests are very good. So it's really an honor for me to be here. Thank you.
Well, the pleasure and the honor is all ours, Paul. Well, if you don't mind, tell the audience a bit about your background and how you came to be the investigator that you are.
Okay, well, to cut a long story short, I'm half French, half British. And basically, when I was younger, I was very interested in aeroplanes. And I was in school in Britain, in London, in the UK. And when we were 7 years old, we used to go to the local library, and I was looking for books on planes, the Usborne books and all that, and quite well known in England. And one day I just came across a book on UFOs, The Usborne Guide on UFOs. So I was very interested in all that, and really fascinated, especially with the Kelly Hopkinsville story. There was evoked in that book. So anyway, afterwards, I moved back to France. Things got lost, but I still kept that fascination for UFOs. Then there was the 1990 UFO waves, and I was a young kid in Belgium. I was a young kid, so they spoke a lot about it because it was in France and Belgium, especially in Belgium, but also in France, although there was less media attention. So I kept being interested in all that. And then when I was 11, I got to meet my grandmother, who was a medium, who was a spiritualist. So we started to speak about ghosts and everything and all her experiences. So I was really taken, really taken in by all that, because I didn't meet her till I was 11 years old. So really taken in by all that. And then everything continues, but my interest as such got sparked in August 1994. I was in W.H. Smith's, which was the English bookshop in Paris, looking for books again, and in fact looking on for scientific and medical books, because I've always been very interested in sciences, natural sciences, animals. And amongst the natural science books, I found a book called The Complete Guide on Mysterious Beings by John Keel. And since finding that book, everything exploded, and I've just been interested in UFOs, aliens, the supernatural presence, secret societies, how the world really works since then. And gradually I've got gathered more and more information. I did my memoir for my master's degree in scientific journalism on the subject of UFOs, in fact, because I was so interested in all that. And the person who did it, the maître de thèse, I don't know how you say it in English, the person who supervises your memoir, was open-minded, so he actually got it through. And that was very rare, because in France, it's quite the university system is quite closed-minded. So anyway, I graduated as a scientific journalist, and I did various jobs in different news organizations and also in the French railways and the communication services and all that. But I couldn't quite get off the subject of UFOs and how the world worked. Then, basically, in 2006, 2007, lots of things happened in my life, and I changed completely. I bought a small business, a small bookstore, specialized in physical subjects. From then on, I got to meet different French researchers. I also did my own research, meeting abductees, contactees. I've also had a few personal experiences. So basically, that's how I got to do my research. And I started also giving talks on the nature of reality, the nature of our world, through the num through personal experiences, personal intuitions, let's say, but also through my readings, through people I've met, and everything. And since then, I haven't stopped. I work on UFOs all my free time, basically, on the supernatural presence all my free time. I've also written four books in French on the subject. So that's really how I got into it. So it's basically something that I've been passionate about since I was 13 years old, since 1993. And it's something, in fact, it's my life is my family and my research. So
No, thank you for sharing that, Paul. We have similarities in that we each have what seems to be synchronistic events involving books. I know many times in my life I'd be guided to go to a particular bookstore or guided to go to a particular bookstore and walk to a certain part of of a bookstore, used bookstores usually in my case, and they're waiting for me, seemingly striving to get my attention, with the title on the binding is some book that I was meant to see, right? And I hear stories from the bookseller as well. I was just about to take that book off the shelf because no one was interested in it. It had been there for a while, and then you come along, and so so I've had a similar thing where books synchronistically seem to come to me at just the right time. That I could derive some kind of epiphany from it. And so we have that similarity as well as commonalities with interest in UFOs and the personal experiences as well. When did you start to get the impression that the UFO cover-up, if you will, and the ancient understanding of non-human life forms, of aliens, of the gods, if you will, where you realize that there was a connection between what was happening in the surface world, the geopolitical aspects going on the surface, this ever increasing crescendo to bring about centralized control and an authoritarian world government. When did it dawn on you that there seemed to be some kind of connection with a non-human element?
Well, basically, it's when you look at how things go, the plan is just too big. It's too long to come from human elements. For example, when you study history, you can see that events repeat themselves through different forms in the Roman Empire. There were certain events, the mirrored events that happen in the Western world nowadays. You see things repeating themselves You see synchronicities. You also see how the events are interconnected. You can see that without past events, some events, contemporary events, could not take place. So you see, it's everything. When you see even plans, for example, the plan for a build-up of a world government, people were talking about that in ancient Egypt, ancient Babylonia, for example, in the Bible. Now, I'm not at all religious or anything, but in the Bible, you have the Babel Tower, and that's typical of the will to impose what you'd call a world order, a new world order, so-called new world order. And that's, I think, 3,000 years ago, 3,000 or 2,000 and something years ago. And you see the same events happening nowadays. When you look at the British monarchy, they wanted also to impose in the Elizabethan times, Elizabeth I, this form of new world order with all the concepts such as British Israelism, New Atlantis, etc. So it's def so there seems to be this plan that's building up that goes back from ancient times, and it seems to be the same plan nowadays. Then you look at the different types of families, the different bloodlines. Basically, people have done researches, and they've shown that more or less all American presidents, including Trump and Biden, descend from European royalty. Now, that's not a coincidence. In France, for example, all the presidents are either illegitimate children of the Rothschilds, according to some researchers, or have worked for the Rothschilds, including this current president. So it's all seems to be linked back to ancient families. Then when you look into those families' mythologies, they say they came from the gods. The Rothschilds, for example, there's all that mystique about them. The British royal family and the European royal families, there's all that mystique about them descending from the pharaohs. Louis the 14th was called the Sun King. Now that's very symbolic, the sun of this non-human presence, for different reasons. Also, the French royal family was supposed to have supernatural powers and was supposed to be capable of curing illnesses. And then you see there's a more sinister aspect to all that. You see that all those families seem to be connected to a satanic network. I mean, Satanism was rife within the French royal family. People have spoken about what happens with the Rothschilds, the Rockefellers, for example, Arizona Wilder in David Icke's books, etc. Also in Germany, people are speaking out about basically satanic rituals performed by the ruling elite and all that. So it's in every country in the world, there's this satanic connection, and this connection of the so-called elites coming from the gods. Even the Chinese and the Japanese emperors said they descended from the gods, basically. The Japanese emperor is still considered like gods on earth. And then you have this mystique behind them. And when you look at it, basically, it's Satanism, it's Luciferianism, whatever you call it, it's something that's profoundly evil and that's linked to this supernatural presence. And this alien presence, accounts of the alien presence, you find it everywhere in every mythology. I mean, you find it in the Bible, obviously, in the Quran with the jinn. You find it in Jewish mythology with demons and all that. You find it even in Australian mythology, for example, the rainbow serpent with the Aborigines and all that. In South America, the emperors said they descended from the feathered serpents, and they did sacrifices to the feathered serpent. You find that absolutely everywhere. Then when you look at the traditional myths in different countries, you find the same. In France, you find the myths of Le Fay, the fairies, that you find in the UK. The same myths are also found in basically Portugal and Spain and Greece and all Europe, but the same myths are found in China, in Hawaii, in Australia. So you can see there's a non-human connection. Then if you go another level, you see the synchronicities, you see the predictive programming. For example, in America, whatever you think of Trump, there was all this predictive programming about him being president in the Back to the Future films. Also, even each time he was interviewed, people were asking him, "What do you think about politics?" when he was only a young businessman. You find that with a lot of politicians. In France, for example, Macron. His name is Macron in French, and it basically rhymes with macaron, a cake. And his wife, quote wife, her family used to own one of the biggest cake shops in Amiens. So there's all those name games, those synchronicities that sound stupid around politicians, but you find the same synchronicities with UFO contactees. John Keel spoke about the name game, the play on names, the play on myths also. When you see the life of Princess Diana, it mirrors certain Greek tragedies, certain Greek myths. And Evie Logan, who you know, when I interviewed her, she said that it mirrored a lot of people that are victims of the love bite phenomenon. Their life mirrors Greek or Egyptian or whatever tragedies, myths. And I was in contact with this French journalist, and basically she lost her husband in terrible circumstances, and she was also a victim of what you would call gang stalking and all that by human agencies and non-human agencies. And she was saying her life was like the life of ISIS. It was almost as if her life was being made to stick to the mythology of ISIS. So you see all those details, the predictive programmings, the name game, the synchronicities. You'll find them in politics, you'll find them in geopolitics. For example, Ole Damgaard, who's done excellent work on false flags and things like that, has shown that there's all those synchronicities, there's basically number codes, at least in some of them. And it's so precise that there's got to be a non-human element. There's got to be something that controls this reality. And then you go into concepts like the holographic universe, the Mandela effect, and all the way reality is manipulated. And you see that something that's pulling the string is manipulating this reality. And more simply, you see that in abductions, how life of abductees is basically a succession of synchronicities, of time manipulations, of manipulation of reality. About 2 years ago, I interviewed an American lady, Lisa O'Hara, And she said that in some of her abductions, she was actually returned before she was taken. So you see time manipulation. Then you have Carissa Conti, another American abductee, who in her book talks about all those synchronicities in her life that are just non-natural when added. So that's really how you get to see that there's seems to be a force that's pulling the strings behind politics, behind geopolitics, and behind abductions. And this force seems to be vampiric in nature, in the sense that it feeds off energy, that it feeds off our energy, that it mocks us, that it plays with us like a cat plays with a mouse. So then you come to conclusions that aren't necessarily good conclusions, but that have to be said. And it's basically that we are property of a non-human force.
That was Charles Fort's thesis, that humanity is someone's property, that we are being farmed. And that is a constant theme preceding the Gnostics, that there is some kind of demiurgic force which permeates or tries to permeate through all living things, corrupt it, and create this dystopic, authoritarian, life squelching type of system. And what's interesting is you talked about the centrality of the gods to a lot of the ancient peoples, and fast forwarding to modern times, where these hybridized reptilian bloodline elites sprinkled throughout society, many so-called bastard lines, as you say, people that have no outward connection to these bloodline families, but their careers are being enhanced, moved along, progressed, and they wind up being in cinema or being in media or whatever the case may be, in journalism. One of the things that has come to the fore recently, but as you pointed out, harkens back to the past, is nowadays the Luciferian symbolism is so in your face nowadays, where we have the halftime Super Bowl halftime extravaganzas, where it's just some big Babylonian louche fest usually. We have the opening ceremonies to the Olympics and what have you, and the closing ceremonies, and they always reek of these Luciferian esoteric themes. And when you go back in time and you look at, you reference Queen Elizabeth I, her astrologer royal, Dr. John Dee, and his colleague, Dr. Kelly, or whatever his name was, they were involved in the Babylon working, not the Babylon working, the watchtowers, and the watchtower working. And it had to do, once again, with this notion of making it so that the British Empire, through its corporate offshoots like the East India Trading Company, et cetera, what we would now call transnational conglomerates, that they were going around taking over the whole world, essentially, or whatever, and competing with other royal families, which they're connected to, the Dutch, what have you, in different parts of the world. But again, it seems to have been guided, this desire to extend the British Empire globally seems to have been inspired by the supernatural forces. And what Dr. John Dee and his colleague were involved with is just a small example of that. Did you want to comment on that or anything similar to it?
Absolutely. You find supernatural forces behind John Dee. And John Dee used to work with an obsidian, with a black obsidian, basically a black mirror, through whom he used to contact those entities. Then you have Crowley. Now, Crowley was basically a British agent. Also, he was a Nazi and a Satanist, an evil man. And he basically was in contact with non-human entities such as Lamb, etc. There's also a link between Crowley and the Philadelphia Experiment and the Loch Ness Monster, because he rented Boleskine or owned Boleskine House not far from the Loch, and he experimented with time, and he seemed to have opened dimensional portals, which in part explain why people see things in the Loch, because not a portal can lead to other dimensions, but also can lead back in time. And his magic was was also in the Philadelphia experiment. Take 9/11. 9/11, you have the work of Sherwood Ken Bain, which shows that it was an enormous Crowleyan magic ritual dedicated to Sirius, dedicated to Osiris. Again, in 9/11, you find even an allusion to Crowley with the sheriff around where, not the sheriff, the person that was the head of the FBI where Flight 93 crashed, was called Tom Crowley, like Aleister Crowley. Now, does that mean he was involved or anything? Not at all. It's just synchronicity, manipulation of reality. Doesn't mean those people are involved or anything. Reality is manipulated by forces so that it sticks to this Crowleyan aspect. Also, Flight 11, Flight 77, Flight 93, etc. So anyway, there's all this supernatural element. Then you go into computers, artificial intelligence, the internet, etc. Now, basically, the screen, the television screen, was discovered through a person, Sir William Crookes, who invented the tube cathodique in French, cathodic tube, I think it's called in English, which was basically behind old televisions. And he invented that tube to communicate with spirits, to communicate with the dead. According to experts in the domain of screens, those old screens used to open portals, and the new screens, the flat screens, open more portals. Now, when you look at the technology behind computers, the microchip, as it's known nowadays, it comes from the Roswell crash, according to the work of Philip Corso, that seems to have been a staged event by those non-human entities to basically get certain technologies into the public domain through the military-industrial complex, not for the betterment of mankind, but to manipulate mankind through artificial intelligence and everything. Now, when you look, so there's this alien origin with the computers. And when you look even at smartphones, at computer screens, they're black and they mirror the black mirror of John Dee. And when you look also at what's behind the screens, etc., symbolically, people that are hooked onto computers all day long, that are addicted to computers, are hooked onto another world. And I'd suggest that if we don't use computers properly and the internet and so-called smart technologies properly, in the sense that we use them to find information, to talk with somebody far away, to give information, that's very good. But when people use, like, Facebook to say what they've eaten, to tell their neighbor what they've eaten instead of going to see the neighbor, that's not a wise use. And I'm suggesting that those new so-called smart technologies open us on other worlds, other dimensions that are linked to those non-human entities that we'd call the jinn, the demons, reptilians, whatever you call them. So there's this supernatural component that you find in different domains. And that's really something that's really interesting. You find in science, you find in politics, in geopolitics, the occultic elements, and also you find those supernatural elements and this non-human presence everywhere. And then you go into more synchronicities. For example, it's been 60 years since Kennedy was killed. Well, when you look at Kennedy's biography, it seems that his life was controlled by those non-human beings for him to become president and then to be ritually sacrificed but in Dallas. And there's an American author, Peter Lavender, that showed all those synchronicities between the assassination of Kennedy, the mind control programs, and the Council of Nine. The Council of Nine, that is a group of extraterrestrials that seems to be behind channelers. And basically, Peter Lavender shows that a lot of people, like Ruth Payne, the head of Bell Helicopters, I don't remember what his name was, that were involved with the Nine, were indirectly involved in the Kennedy assassination and all that by, for example, harboring the Patsy, Lee Harvey Oswald, etc. So you start to see that there's all this those synchronicities and this non-human element behind all that. So it's so there's something supernatural, something occultic that underlines all major events, and that something occultic is this non-human presence, in my opinion, anyway.
That's a lot to unpack there because it shows the linear and at times advanced progression from the past blending into the future. Crowley believed himself to be a reincarnation of Edmund Kelly, who was working with Dr. John Dee. And also, we have Crowley and his magical workings. For example, the Stele of Revealing, where his wife, you know, you're familiar with the story at the Cairo Museum, I think it was. She was overcome by some kind of force that momentarily possessed her. She walks over to the Stele of Revealing. I forget what number it was. Could have been Stele number 93. I can't remember if it was Robert Anton Wilson or somebody, but somebody was making the connection with the 93 wave, the 93 current wave, that number. There's some kind of Kabbalistic, occultic aspect to it, similar in a way to 77 being a Kabbalistic number. Because in the Crowleyan scheme of things, his Thelemic brand of magic, where he, it seemed that he wanted to meld what he considered to be the best aspects from different disciplines, all connected at some level. But you have the Golden Dawn, you have the Enochian, hearkening back to Dr. John Dee. Again, like I said, Crowley believed himself to be a reincarnation of Edmund Kelly, who worked with John Dee. He has the Stele of Revealing moment with his wife, and he realizes that he himself is a reincarnation of one of the adepts that are depicted in the Stele of Revealing. And that Stele of Revealing reeks of outer space connections. You have the overarching image of Nuit, you know, stretched out over the earth and her belly, the womb of the universe with all the stars, et cetera, et cetera. And Crowley was an absolute believer in extraterrestrial life. In his writings, he talked about, you know, the purpose behind the symbolism part of it, of standing in the circle and standing in a certain geometrical, sacred symbols, if you will, during the invocations and the workings, was that was a point where an alien intelligence could focus on Earth, and he would be the conduit between the two, right? So, and Crowley always talked about the crowned horus, the crowned and avenging sun, and that November, historically, October, November, historically brings about these epical changes in, I mean, you think of the Bolshevik Revolution, of course, in October, November time frame. And so when all of this started happening with October 7th and in Israel, et cetera, I knew we were headed once again in that direction that Crowley talked about, the new eon of Horus, the crown, the avenging sun, and that Horus, his manifestation for that time frame associated with Mars, associated with November and October, et cetera, was a harbinger of things to come, as far as like wars and rumors of wars and et cetera, et cetera. And a quick point, and I'd like your thoughts on this too. You brought up Kennedy and Roswell. I have come to the tentative conclusion, we're all allowed to make hypotheses, right? And I believe that one or more ET races conspired to create this huge Trojan horse operation that we know as the Roswell event.
Absolutely.
Because there had been crash retrievals of alien craft before then. But what Roswell represented was a bonanza in the form of back engineering, because the craft conveniently exploded in midair, showering the debris field with technology and wreckage they otherwise would not have been able to access. And as Philip Corso and others have pointed out, along with the strange material, foal-like material with super strength and tensile memory and other unusual extraordinary properties, there were items in the debris field which could be likened later on to what we would call fiber optics, microcircuitry. And you talked about the microcircuitry from Roswell. You fast forward to the treatments today, the nanotechnology in these so-called treatments that have been rolled out the last few years. We know for a fact that some of the Roswell material was the micro engineering aspects, the microprocessor aspects of the alien wreckage was sent to MIT, where they developed and worked on miniaturization and microization, if that's a word. The former dean of Massachusetts Institute of Technology, Dr. Vannevar Bush, was one of the key members of MJ-12. And you look at what happened to Kennedy, I'm satisfied, and this is just me, and I felt this for some time, that the assassination of President Kennedy was an extreme step to take. If it only had to do with Cubans and Castro and the Bay of Pigs and wanting to break up the FBI, the Mossad involvement, it had to be something bigger than all of that. And then the information that Linda Howe and others have come up with, and I've done my own research in this regard, it seemed as if President Kennedy at some point, and Kennedy had been exposed to the Roswell information at the time of Roswell, because he was a congressman from Massachusetts. He had still had connections with naval intelligence and in other aspects of the intelligence community who gave him information about Roswell. And the Kennedys were very much one of these bloodline families. And point being is that Kennedy apparently wanted to go public with the reality of the alien presence on Earth. You look at E. Howard Hunt, apparently, according to his lawyer, the reason that Kennedy was bumped off was because, according to E. Howard Hunt, one of the plumbers in the Nixon Watergate scandal and longtime CIA operative, the reason he was killed was that Kennedy was going to reveal the alien presence. And then when you look at the other deaths around him, Marilyn Monroe, who also shared an interest in aliens and UFOs with Kennedy, Kennedy probably in pillow talk with her shared information about Roswell and other similar events. Dorothy Kilgallen, a well-known, highly respected journalist in America, a real investigative journalist. She'd already done headline stories out of the UK about the British government's interest in crashed alien spacecraft. So her interest in UFOs preceded what happened to John F. Kennedy, and Dorothy Kilgallen was firsthand investigating the Kennedy assassination. She knew Jack Ruby personally, was in the courtroom when a lot of that was going on. She was conveniently suicided and murdered also. So, and you look at Secretary of Defense James Forrestal, one of the original Majestic 12ers, who apparently had a meeting with an alien, one of the survivors from Roswell or another crash, and the alien told them telepathically, this is just the start. More of us are coming, and some of the aliens coming later are going to be hostile, right? And of course, those hostile aliens were already on Earth. Point being is that something had to be drastic enough to want to remove a sitting president, because they could easily have kept Kennedy in office, surrounded him by minions and minders, and then they could have affected any change they wanted to through Kennedy. So it was not just that he blackmailed the mob, he double-crossed the mob who got him in to the presidency, played a big role. That was just a part of it. But the fact that he wanted to go public with alien presence, that was a tipping point. That was a line that should not be crossed as far as the control system is concerned. I'm satisfied that he was killed because of the alien connection. Your thoughts on that or anything else?
Absolutely. The alien non-human presence is the biggest, and it's quite paradoxical. It's the biggest taboo, and it's also the most manipulated subject in history, basically. Now, I'm going to elaborate on it's very, very important. People have died all over the world for wanting to expose this science. Kennedy, I totally agree with you, was killed in part through that. Then there's other reasons, of course, but in part it was, and the main reason was definitely that plus ritual aspects to his death. James Forrestal also, but it's a worldwide phenomenon. In France, one of the best French ufologists of all time, Jimmy Geer, I don't know if you've heard about him, he was the first one to talk about the grey presence in France, and he translated the John Lear papers in the 90s, did lots of field work. Best French ufologist, in my opinion. He was murdered, he was poisoned, basically, when he was starting to talk about the reptilian presence and all that. So that was a tragedy. In France, there's also this journalist, Claire Sévérac. She wrote lots of books on chemtrailing, on spraying, on the medical conspiracy. And she was open to UFOs. She died very mysteriously of a fast spreading cancer, like Dr. Carla Turner in the USA, etc. So French deaths of people that are trying to give truth about UFOs are frequent everywhere. In the UK, Tony Dutt, also very, very good ufologist, brilliant man, brain tumor, bonked off. Now that's linked to directed energy weapons that can actually cause those diseases, and also to black magic, because those intelligence agencies are controlled by non-human intelligences, let's say it basically, non-human beings, and they use black magic to kill. Why? Because it's the perfect crime, and people don't realize how prevalent black magic is. I mean, even in politics, for example, there was this person that said that in France in the 90s, Chirac and Balladur, who were two rivals for the French presidency, were fighting basically through black magic, were fighting each other through black magic. So it's used really absolutely everywhere. And behind black magic, it's non-human entities, it's aliens. So that plays a part in killing UFO researchers, but also UFO witnesses. Then, and that's the paradox, there's, and I'm not going to mention names here, but there's lots of UFO researchers that are pushed forward by the system, basically all the fake disclosure crowd in the USA, and some of them are linked to those bloodline families, the Mellon family, the Keane family, etc. Without going into too much detail, they're pushing this official disclosure where there's nothing in it except pushing the agenda of either an alien threat. It's paradoxical again, either a potential alien threat, or by saying, well, UFOs, they're there, but they're UAPs, nothing to worry about, etc. Now, behind this official disclosure, you have the hand of the CIA, of different intelligence services, and of secret societies. In France, there was the Cometa report in the 90s, which was an official disclosure that spoke about a few UFO sightings, but nothing about abductions, nothing about contacts. And the message was the world has to unite to fight against a potential hostile alien presence or an invasion, basically. Now, there's no invasion, in my opinion, to have because the aliens are here already. They control the affairs. So there's no invasion to wait for. The invasion is done. As Dr. David Jacobs says, it's not an invasion, it's an occupation. And it's been there for a millennia, basically. So you have this official narrative that's pushed, and it's in parallel to basically the ridiculing of UFO witnesses. And more recently, there's lots of people that have been pushed forward by the algorithms and all that, that are talking about the Galactic Federation, that we're going to be saved, that the reptilians have gone and everything. Now, I've spoken to some of those people, and they're sincere in the sense that they've been in contact with a non-human presence. That's, for me, that's clear. That when they talk, you can feel that they're sincere. But in my opinion, having read John Keel, having also spoken to lots of contactees and channelers who've been deceived by aliens, well, a lot of them have been deceived by aliens, interdimensionals, crypto-terrestrials, jinn, demons, whatever you call them, who are posing as so-called space brothers, as so-called beings of light. So basically, they're being manipulated by forces they don't understand. And their narrative is being pushed by the algorithms, artificial intelligence, etc., to be on top of all that. One example also, and people won't like me for saying it, but John Mack. Dr. John Mack, I loved his research and everything. He was a very brave man, very open-minded, for speaking about the alien abduction phenomenon, that you can't take that away from him. In his position, who do then now? Who do that now? So, very brave man, but there's always a but. In my opinion, he was deceived by the alien beings who were talking through the abductees, and also unknowingly by the CIA, who financed his work without, I think, without him knowing it, through the Noetic Institute and all that. There's a very important book by Paul and Phil Collins, I think, two brothers, who talk about how he was financed unknowingly by the CIA. But anyway, at one point, he started to realize that he had been deceived, that he was being deceived by the non-human presence, and also possibly by human agencies. And according to a French UFO researcher, I don't know if it's true or not, he was going to talk about, he was going to mention reptilians at a UFO conference. Well, he didn't get, he was more or less killed in very suspect circumstances in London. The official story doesn't add up. So it's almost as if John Mack, without realizing it, was being controlled by the aliens. Then at one time, he realized what had happened because he was a very intelligent man, very brave man. He realized, and he was going to speak. And basically, they just killed him. And that's what happens a lot. And even there was a pilot that was working on Roswell, I think, in the 90s. And he was uncovering lots of information on Roswell. And according to a French UFO researcher who worked with him, he was one day taking off when his wheels came off. He managed to land his plane, but he stopped all his researches on Roswell, and he was going apparently quite far. So definitely there's the will of the powers that be to totally put the dampers to mettre sous le boisseau in French, to cover up the UFO phenomenon on one hand, and on the other hand, they want to control the narrative to either push the fake alien invasion and the fake savior programming. And we can go into that if you want to. The fake alien invasion, fake apocalypse, etc., that ties in with what's happening in Israel and Palestine at the moment. And it also ties in with the Blue Beam project. That's something that's, in my opinion, very real, although perhaps not as Serge Monas described it in the 90s, because he didn't have all the elements we have now, but there's something very real to it. In other words, staging chaos or a perception of chaos, staging, in a sense, an ambiance of an apocalypse, while at the same time staging a fake savior. And we can go into that in more detail if you want to.
Yeah, that's all fascinating because what I see happening now geopolitically, what's going on in the Middle East, this massive bloodletting that's going on, I can't help but think of it in terms of a very public mass sacrifice. And I'll get into that also, but it ties into Crowley's Aeon of Horus, wars and rumors of wars, this apocalyptic revealing, and you're probably familiar with the Gods of Eden book written by William Bramley, and that he just lays it
Very
out in that book.
possible.
It's just a absolute classic. Could you let our viewers and listeners know how they can find your work, Paul, and your websites and all that?
Well, most of my work is in French. I've interviewed quite a few English-speaking researchers. I've interviewed you, and your interview should be up this month. I've interviewed Evie Logan, David Icke. I'm going to interview Ole Damgaard on Tuesday on the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. I've interviewed also Jerry Marzinski, whose work is fundamental, in my opinion, to understand the alien manipulation, to understand how we're all manipulated in our everyday life. We could also go into that because it's really, really fascinating. So my work, it can be found on my website, au-delà de l'illusion.fr, that is censored from YouTube. So basically, if you have a link on YouTube, it won't work. So you can find me on my Odyssey, on my Odyssey channel, which is called au-delà de l'illusion.fr, which is called, I'm sorry, au-delà de l'illusion, beyond the illusion. And I'll send you all the links, and that's where you'll get all my work.
That's great, Paul. You've been doing fantastic work. And to our dear listeners and viewers out there, if you like what we do, if you believe what we do, please go to thecosmicswitchboard.com, sign up and become a member, and we'll see you at the top of the member segment.